You got one hour.
Okay. I'll do this. Self-supporting that I am. Hello. My name is McCall. I am a blackout thinker. Some call us Al-Anonics. It's hard for me to say I'm a grateful Al-Anon still, because for so many years of my life, I thought Al-Anons were nuts, complainers, old, chose to be married to an alcoholic that made them miserable, or still complaining about dead parents 40 years after they've passed away. Thought they were all gardeners, had 17 cats, because they're covered in cat hair, and a bag, not with books like AA people did, knitting needles and yarn. And the way I formed that judgment, because it really wasn't an opinion, was in 1981, I came home from fourth grade, and my mom wasn't home. My mother and I lived alone in Cleveland, Ohio. We lived in the far east side of Cleveland, Ohio. My grandparents, her parents, lived on the west side. My grandparents had a boat at the Cleveland Yacht Club. Yes, Cleveland does have a yacht club. They had two country club memberships. My grandfather was an OBGYN and delivered half of Cleveland when I was a little girl. My mother, however, chose to leave for Cornell University in Ithaca, New York, and learn to be a poet, or I don't know if you learned that exactly, but fell in love with my biological father and had me, not a wedding, and then left him a year and a half later and fled back to Cleveland to her parents. However, that's not where she stayed and raised me. She moved to the far east side of Cleveland, which is an all-black neighborhood, and I went to a Hebrew school. Not black, not Jewish. My name at birth was McCall. The words terminally unique might as well be tattooed on my forehead. And I knew it at a very young age. So when my mother didn't come home that night, and I woke up the next morning and she still wasn't there, I started to get a little nervous. But when your mother is an alcoholic and you live as an only child with just your mother in such isolation that no, where you look, you just can't see any reflection of what you think you are. It's where the disease thrives, right? I told someone at my school that I was nervous about walking home because I was scared my mom still might not be home. They're mandated reporters, and adults get involved. However, that grandfather I mentioned, who delivered half of Cleveland, that half tends to work in the police department with Child Protective Services and on the fire department. So instead of me going into the system, I got into a woman's car and was driven to a hospital where I presumed, expected to see my mom. I didn't. I got walked down into a basement, actually very similar to this room, with the lights off, with a girl who someone said was a candy striper, so I thought I was also gonna get candy, and there was no candy. The lights came on, the fluorescent overhead lights, and there was nobody else there. And she told me there would be kids coming in soon. So I sat down trying to do my homework, very scared, but pretending I wasn't. Because from the earliest age, My mom, as an alcoholic, in a neighborhood that didn't reflect our skin color or any kind of a faith as if we had one, it didn't feel safe. And I needed to protect her. I was the man in the family. And weakness looked like fear or grief or tears. Being angry, pointing my finger and yelling at people, that felt powerful. However, it made me more frightened. And then the kids came in. To me, they weren't kids. These were grown-ups for all intents and purposes, because I'm not even 10 at this point, and these are teenagers coming in, and they are cool and loud and swearing, and I loved it. And I learned that this was a place in Alateen that I could be completely, rigorously honest to the point of explaining stories how I felt them more than how I experienced them sometimes. And as a young Al-Anon in training, I went Alan on and on and on and on. And each time I told my stories of truth, they got a little bigger because they felt so big. And one of my compulsions is to make sure whoever I am with understands reality like me. I need you to co-sign because I didn't have a magnetic north, is how I've put it before. My daughter is here today. That's Harper. She doesn't love this story, but I'm going to share it just as an example of what I experienced growing up. There was a wonderful night where my mother gave me a little teeny glass, thimble, shot glass, of amaretto. I was maybe 6, and I would drink it with my pinky and just suck my pinky because it was really sweet. And we were telling dirty jokes with one another, laying in her bed. And we started talking about SeaWorld. In Cleveland, there was a SeaWorld there. And we made plans that the next day we were going to play hooky and go to SeaWorld together. And I could barely sleep. I was so excited. So when the sun came up, I turned off her alarm so she could get rest. And I went downstairs and I made us peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and Ruffles potato chips. I cleaned up myself. I cleaned up the kitchen. And I went upstairs. And I woke my mom up gently and told her, we're all ready to go. I packed lunch even. And she looked at the clock and lost it. What did you do? You are sabotaging me. I have to get to work. McCall, why would you do this? We can't possibly. And what I thought was reality and what the adult in my life was telling me were not converging. And something happened inside of me that I stopped knowing what was true. I mean, it really blurred the lines that I was trying so hard to make her happy and experience this day with her. And then to realize I had screwed up. I had upset her, I had threatened her job, and probably she was gonna need to have a drink because of it. So yeah, I didn't have a magnetic north, but I had this flashing neon sign that you all could see that said terminally unique, and thought that I lived behind a one-way mirror. I could see everything that was going on with hyper-vigilance. And I could predict better than any fortune cookie you've ever read. I can walk into a room and I can feel the vibe. I can hear 6 conversations at once, and I thought it was necessary in order to make sure everything was okay. Because if everything was okay for you, then maybe it would feel okay for me. My mother stayed in the hospital, I think, 30 days that first visit in 1981, the first visit I knew about. But this is a progressive illness. And she continued to drink. She has had a drawer, well over 100 24-hour chips. And I was always jealous because I had one silver dollar that said 1981 on it, and I still have it, that my sponsor gave me when I got on my knees. Cleveland, Ohio is very Bill and Ann influenced, very Oxford group, four absolutes are on the wall. I was on my knees doing prayers for my third step ceremony, and she gave me my 1981 silver dollar. That's the only chip I had, though, and I was jealous. Because while my mom was in the hospital, Ms. Shapiro would pick me up from school every day and drive me to an Alateen meeting. One weekday night and one weekend night, she would take me to an Al-Anon meeting. And like I said, old fat ladies who gardened had too many cats and too many knitting needles and were crying about parents who had been dead and choosing to remain married to an alcoholic that drove him up the wall. But I, and if you're not in Al-Anon or don't know, this is the Al-Anon salute. I, with my back of my hand placed firmly against my forehead, looking like I'm about to need fainting salts, felt, oh, you don't get it. I don't have a choice. Alcohol has taken everything. This is my mommy. Woe is me. Poor me. Poor me. Poor me another think. Because there had to be a way I could think my way out of it. Step 11, obviously, was that we pray for understanding of God's will and the power to carry that out. And if I thought long enough, I could figure out and understand God's will. The road to my personal hell is not paved with good intentions. It's paved with one question. Why? Why? Because I wanted to understand. Why did I want to understand, though? Because if you understand why the vacuum is not working and how it works, you can fix it. And I was a victim. Woe is me. Plus, when you're not even a teenager yet, and you have a single alcoholic parent and live on the bad side of town, guess what you get? A lot of attention. And so I would tell my story on and on, bigger and bigger and bigger. Seventh grade. My mother went back into the hospital, but this day, I think she did 90 days at a facility. I was put into boarding school 5 days a week in Cleveland, Ohio. The boarding school was called Gilmore, and it's a Catholic boarding school, all white and very wealthy. So if you're keeping track, we've got Hebrew school in an all-black neighborhood. Now we've got a white Catholic school with lots of money kids. I did everything I could to get kicked out of that place. Literally shaved my head into a mohawk in eighth grade. However, my mother had a little slip. We call them the trifecta of holidays. The three obstacles to success. It's not gossip, dominance, and religion. Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's. There's 9 out of 11 holidays my mom has been in the hospital. But it means she's sober by Valentine's Day, so that's when we have our Christmas. However, this time it was going that direction. And where was I going to go for the holidays? The freaking headmistress's house. Pat Rockway took me to her house with her fancy, preppy kids and loved me like I was her adopted child from the, you know, from the inner city or something. But I liked when people pitied me and felt bad for me. That was attention. They could see me. So I wore what we call in our literature a martyr face. Even if I was having a wonderful time somewhere else, as soon as I walked in the door and saw anybody, my hand on my head, woe is me, and I'd regale you with stories of how hard life is. Yeah, Gilmore Academy didn't work out for very long. So I went to another boarding school in Maine. A Quaker boarding school. My grandparents on holidays would go to a church. It was an Episcopalian church, very fancy, and incense and things you're supposed to say when they say some call and response thing that I didn't know. Baruch Ata Adonai Eloheinu Melech. I didn't know what they were talking about. Again, terminally unique. Didn't fit in anywhere. But I had worked the steps by that point. And I think I tripped over step two and hit my face on step three. The God of my understanding? Like, I couldn't understand division, guys. But I was supposed to understand a God that could restore me to sanity? I don't think so. So I called it the Gomu, the God of my understanding, and just tried to move on. How do you pray to the Gomu? It's like praying to the Lorax or something. Like it just, there was no contact. There was no personal connection. That's okay. When we were on our way to a meeting, Ms. Shapiro was listening to me complain about all my mom's defects and asked me to write them down on a piece of paper. Selfish, self-centered, list. So easy. Then she said, turn it over. Let's talk about things that you love about your grandma that you wish your mom had inherited, because my grandma was a rock. And I wrote all the things about my grandmother that I wished my mom had inherited. And on the way back from the meeting that night, before she dropped me off, she said, now put your name at the top. Well, what do you mean? Put your name at the top, and I want you to give me examples of how you've been all of those things in your life. That was my first fourth step. And it was effective, because even in that moment, I knew, did not understand, but knew it was true. I'm an alcoholic, type 2. I don't like the taste of alcohol. It deadens my senses. How can I be hypervigilant and save everybody or tell my stories if I'm numbed? I grew up being exposed to the 12 steps and program quite regularly. I think there was a point in a hotel in downtown where this old black man and old white woman man were reading the book, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and commenting on it as people were doing their work, and it was packed in this little hotel. I don't know who Joe and Charlie were. They were old people. I just wanted to go swimming. I still have those books, though. In fact, one of the earliest books I have is called Al-Anon Faces Alcoholism. I got this in 1981 with my allowance. I think it was about $4. And I rediscovered it a few years ago. This is out of print now, but the very first page, before any of the Roman numeral pages even, has a quote from Abraham Lincoln. He was addressing the Washington Temperance Society in Springfield, Illinois, almost 200 years ago. In my judgment, such of us who have never fallen victims to alcoholism have been spared more by the absence of appetite than from any mental or moral superiority over those who have. Indeed, I believe if we take habitual drunkards as a class, their heads and their hearts will bear an advantageous comparison with those of any other class. There seems ever to have been a proneness in the brilliant and warm-blooded to fall into the vice. The demon of intemperance ever seems to have delighted in sucking the blood of genius and generosity. The victims should be pitied and compassionated, just as are the heirs of consumption and other hereditary diseases. Their failing should be treated as a misfortune, not a crime, or even a disgrace. Genius and generosity. I can't think of two words that better describe my mom. She has often told me that the world had sharp edges and that alcohol and pills softened them. The world does have sharp edges to me too, but I have finally surrendered to a reprogram of Al-Anon. Al-Anon stands for Alcoholics Anonymous. We work the steps of AA. I'm an alcoholic type 2. So the textbook I use, same one anyone here who reads the big book. This book is written in a way that I believe is divinely inspired as much as any other holy text I've ever explored. And if you've kept count, there's been a lot of them. I also lived in an ashram, studied shamanism, hatha yoga Buddhism, Swedenborganism. It's what Lois Wilson's family was. All of those, when people tell me about them, they don't vibrate to my vibration. That sounds very woo-woo. This does. This book talks about me. 10 minutes before I stood up here, I just flipped through pages, and it looks like the woman at like a small Baptist church in the front row whose Bible has papers sticking out of it, and things stuck in it. I mean, every page is obscenely marked in all kinds of colors, because I really do think it's a textbook. This is an instruction manual on how to live a content, even happy life. Our program says whether the alcoholic is drinking or not, whether I'm thinking or not. This is my manual. And it's written in a way that somebody coming out of DTs can read and understand and do, then so should I be able to. Harper, will you bring me my water? Thank you, love. Thanks. So I opened this book right before coming up here, and I just marked a couple of pages that are of interest to me personally. More than an alcoholic type 2, I'm an escape artist. which is really, in essence, what we do, right? That's what the alcohol or the drugs or the machinations of my brain that create their own drugs give us. Some sort of escape, something to soften the edges. So on page 339, behind the facade, my real life seemed just out of reach. I wanted to consider myself grown up, but inside, I felt small and helpless, hardly there at all. I would look at my friends, delightful, interesting, good people, and try to define myself through them. If they saw something in me that made them want to be with me, I must have something to offer. But their love for me was not a substitute for loving myself. It didn't fill the emptiness. It goes on to talk about geographical cures. Every new school I went to, it's what it was. That was my form of detachment, escape. I got in my car when I was 25 years old and drove as far as it could take me in the opposite direction, basically till I hit water. And I still live in Los Angeles today, and I'm almost 50. The problem? My mom's alcoholism, that black cloud that shrouded me from anyone being able to see me, it freaking moved with me. Like I'm Pigpen. It just followed me around everywhere I looked. I'm looking through this haze that was my mom's. And I continued to build layer upon layer upon layer of defense mechanism, life skill, coping strategy, protection. There are three ways human beings deal with any perceived threat: fight, flight, or freeze. You'll hear people nowadays say fawn. It's just a form of freezing to me. It's not facing reality as reality. It's changing how you perceive it. It's denial, dishonesty. As I said, I work the steps of AA. I also claim the promises. And right after those promises, it talks about step 10, page 84, halfway down the page on the left-hand side of the spread. Al-Anons often say those are the maintenance steps, 10, 11, 12. I don't want to maintain what I'm like right now. I want to grow. And that's what it tells me my next function is, to grow in understanding and effectiveness. So in step 10, again, written for someone who's coming off of a hardcore DTs, three lines, step 10 in this textbook, three sentences that tell you when and what to do, as easy as an IKEA bookshelf instructions, right? Not to disparage the program that is saving my life and probably my children's and husband's and mother's and all y'all's, but I've looked up step 10 in, quote, conference-approved literature. In Al-Anon, there are so many complex ways to work a step 10 that perfectionism, procrastination, and paralysis are three of the worst effects of this disease on my life. And if I couldn't figure out how to work it perfectly, I wasn't even going to try. This textbook does not allow me that escape. Immediately, at once, it tells me that I don't need those three human protections against a perceived threat. Selfishness is fight, flight, and freeze. Fight, resentment. Freeze or fawn, dishonesty. and flight is fear. And so if I feel like I want to run or fight or lie against what is, I've got IKEA instructions on how to build contentment, even happiness. This is my medication. And you guys are the doctors and the nurses who help me take it. Everything that was read in Understanding Ourselves, those symptoms of our disease, it's our disease. It doesn't matter what fellowship you belong to. And frankly, I think the entire world is general neurotics. I believe this is a textbook that could remedy so much strife in everyone. And let's be honest. You know, in Al-Anon meetings, we say that we're open to guests. How do you be a guest in Al-Anon? Can you really tell me that there is a human being, at least on this continent or Ireland or Scotland or England, that can't shake their family tree and have an alcoholic or addict fall out? We all qualify. Because speaking from personal experience, I would much rather be raised by an alcoholic who's very active or in recovery than someone like me. At least other people could blame with me. I seem well-adjusted, productive in society, popular even, successful. I'm just as crazy or crazier, and I don't pass out. I don't go to rehab. Never been in jail, never even had handcuffs on, although I bet there isn't a drunk in this room who's been in more car accidents. Because I can be thinking, and I don't even realize I'm in my car when I hit one. Every page in this book, I can change two letters, DR to TH. It's my thinking. And the book says that alcohol is just a symptom, the bottle, just a symbol. I have so many symbols and symptoms, your brain would freak. Do you know how many different things I've studied? I mean, I've just shared a little bit about religion. Let's talk about musical instruments. Let's talk about lovers. Let's talk about jobs and careers. States I've lived in. Hobbies I've had. I've tried to escape through every means possible. But the Gomu that I was in search of, like I was Prince Charming walking around with its glass slipper, forcing gods to fit into it. Where is the Gomu? Woe is me, I can't find it. It's hiding from me, it's rejected me. Perfectionism, procrastination, paralysis. When my sponsor as a kid asked me to give it a name, because I guess the Gomu wasn't satisfactory, I said Sam. Because all the time she said, as long as it's not you, McCall, as long as it's not you. So she said, what, Sam? Sure ain't me, sure ain't McCall. She didn't think it was very funny, but she accepted it. So one of my other symptoms, rationalization. We have a word, jade, in Al-Anon. Justify, argue, defend, and explain. I found a loophole. Rationalization isn't in there. And I can rationalize anything. Find something on my credit card statement. Find an affair. I'll give you a really rational rationalization. I think of our general neuroses as the Force. Like from Star Wars, we have more mitochondrions or whatever it is in our blood than the average bear. More genius and generosity, as Abraham Lincoln saw. And I can get pulled either way. To the good side with the Jedis or the dark side. So I don't call it Jade, I call it Darth Jader. And it does, it gets my voice talking real low. And I become Darth Jader with all my explanations and rationalizations. 2 pages after what I just read you, and it might have been worse, I think. Page 351. The only one we are fooling is ourselves. We rationalize and excuse our conduct beyond all reason. I was too busy devising excuses, becoming more intolerant and narrow-minded all the time. They didn't realize how cunning I, says an alcoholic, didn't realize how cunning I could be and the lengths to which I would go in finding ways to satisfy the compulsion for more and more. Insatiable, my whole, which I think I probably even knew at the time was a God-shaped hole. It was like a black hole. I would put things in it and it would swallow them up and it'd be empty again. And I blamed other people for that. And I blamed God for that. I realized, says the book, I had been going down and down. I was unhappy myself. And I brought unhappiness to all who cared for me. When your alcoholic mom realizes that, they start becoming Darth Jader too, and it's very rational that your crazy daughter would create a situation that you kind of needed to drink to just get through the day. What I didn't realize in Alateen, as I was condemning prejudice prior to investigation, as Herbert Spencer said, oh my gosh, some of those Al-Anons had children who were addicts. They didn't just choose to be married to an alcoholic or complain about their dead parents who drank. Oh my gosh. Our literature's right. If you try to keep an open mind, you will find help. But mine was getting more and more clear by becoming more and more sure and more narrow, while my stories kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I, just like any other general neurotic, have a magical magnifying mind. What I look for, what I feel like, I will definitely see. In science, it's called the Bader-Meinhof phenomena. You may never have seen a Kia in your town, but I promise, if you consider buying a Kia, they're everywhere. Where attention goes, energy flows. And all my attention went to whatever I was pointing my finger at in the moment. And after I pointed it at you, I would be left alone pointing it at myself and beating myself up. Paying restitution or something, taking an ounce of flesh to the point of truly not believing that I could wake up tomorrow, no less, would want to. So through 20 years of living in Los Angeles, and there are a lot of 12-step meetings in Los Angeles, I did go to ACA for a while. It was a good program. I worked the steps, I read their book, and it really scrubbed a lot of dirt off my insides that had kind of cemented there. But no one flushed the toilet. It kind of sat there. And I knew that this textbook had the answers. But all those meetings that I attended in Los Angeles, the big book is verboten now, apparently, as not conference-approved literature. Even though we work the steps, this isn't our literature. We have our own books, and that's what we're supposed to read. So my resentments were there still, but I started to coming to meetings. Okay, first I started coming about 10, 20 minutes into the meeting because I know the steps, I know the traditions, been there, done that, let's get on with it. And I'd leave 10 minutes before it closed because I didn't want to chant and hold hands with everybody like we're at summer camp. Plus, as a kid, we love you in a very special way. Sounded a lot like somebody was telling me that the little school bus that took me to school was special. It's a special Olympics. I wasn't going there. The GOMU had other plans. And when I finally got curious enough, not courageous, mind you, but curious enough, I went back to the same meeting a couple of times. By the way, you should see this little pamphlet of books in the Los Angeles area I have. It has notes that say what I was wearing, if my hair was up or down, if my tattoos were showing, if I had on makeup. So in case I wanted to go back to that meeting, I would look different, and you might not recognize me. So if anyone's from LA and you were ever at an Al-Anon meeting where somebody's name was Allie, that might have been me. I was so terrified that you were going to ask me to take the literature bag home or do you have a sponsor or can I be your sponsee? Thank you, dear. I was trained at a very early age, when in doubt, don't, unless it's a reasonable program request. The only answer is yes, and your hand should go up before your brain starts moving. You can't get kicked out. You can't get fired or penalized personally. This is where you get to learn, McCall. And I knew if somebody said, is anyone available to take the literature bag? My hand would be up and I'd be like, no, it would be against my will. I would volunteer. So I had to get out of there quick and then complain that there was no personal loving interchange. Go figure. Made a lot of rational sense to me at the time. But I went to this one meeting where they call it a problem-solution meeting, and it happens to be the oldest meeting in Los Angeles. It's called the Arlington AA and Arlington Family Groups. They used to have Alateen and Alitot there too. And it was a meeting before we were even called Al-Anon. We were NAA, or AAA, the auxiliary of AA. And it gave me hope, because once I went and shared a problem, and for the first time in any meeting I had been at as an adult, people looked me in my eyes and said my actual name, McCall, and responded to me and shared their personal experience using program tools and principles to resolve similar situations or feelings in their lives. And in that moment, I felt like the Grinch that stole Christmas, how his heart just got bigger and bigger. I think I expanded so big that I could hear a crack. And it was my armor. It was my protection. It was my shell. It was like somebody had taken out my fingernails and I was raw underneath. Because all that anger that I used to cover up my fear and my guilt came pouring out. I could actually feel things and feel them strong. And I'm sharing that because I'm assuming there are people in this room who had to defrost physically before they could feel emotions also. I don't know if you remember or have had a similar experience, but when you start feeling them again, whew, it's intense. Another thing Ms. Shapiro used to tell me, there were three things I had to repeat. Number one, I will not create or prevent any crisis from naturally occurring. Number two, when in doubt, don't, unless it's a reasonable program request, do quickly and before you begin to think. And number three, don't wear other people's opinions like a tight-fitting wetsuit. I thought that lady was nuts. If I didn't edit myself, I'd die alone. Like, you wouldn't be able to handle being around me. I'm too much. I'm too big. I'm too loud. I have a crosstalk face. I made my mom drink. Because I'm so much. I'm so extra. I'm such an instigator. And so I made the decision to look for good. God, it's a one-letter difference. What's the difference? I'm just going to look for good. Like a game. Like, where's Waldo? I call God Waldo today. It's my pet name. I've got a pet name for everyone I love, including God. Because God is always everywhere, always has been, always will be. I think of it as growth or expansion or evolution. It's an increasing of good. And it's there, depending on how I look at it. And sometimes I will peer through a little crack in a fence at my neighbors and want everything they have. The only normal people are people I don't know well. Regular is a setting on a washing machine. If I can pause long enough to remember the game of life is looking for Waldo today, I can shift my weight to my other foot, and all of a sudden, what I was looking at is different. And I'm learning how to let go of the judgment of it's better or worse. It's just different. And I wouldn't want to go to a chili cook-off if everyone used the same recipe. In fact, the stuff that some people call chili that does not have beef or beans in it, although I may not call it by the same term, if I have a couple bites of it, it sure makes me appreciate the chili I do like more. So if I pull a black marble one morning, and my short-term goal of noon looks a little sideways, I get to pull another marble. And the white marble, after a streak of black ones, is even brighter and better. And I'm starting to know God, not understand it. So now it's the go me, the God of my experience. And it shows up in ways that blow my mind. Even with my tongue in my cheek and calling it Waldo, revering a power greater than myself with such ridiculous irreverence that I'm probably deserve a spanking much more than a present, but I'm convinced I'm his favorite kid. Because there is not a day that could go by in the past, I don't know, 8 years maybe, where it's not active and present in my life, that I don't even need to look. It'll hit me with a 2x4 to get my attention. I think that Waldo saved up all the gifts of service and love, all the presents that I was avoiding by being in the future and the past, in some storage locker or something. Because my life is so inappropriately blessed. And I know I don't deserve it. But I'm learning that I'm worthy of it. My daughter, Harper, celebrates 100 days sober tomorrow. She is 15 years old and goes to a high school in Los Angeles, California, with almost 3,000 people. You can't walk into a bathroom on campus without smelling weed. You can't walk home from school with any friends who aren't planning to score mushrooms or something for the weekend. And my daughter's the kind of person that people do notice. She's exceptional and outstanding. She's been playing women's bank track roller derby since she was 8. She was just accepted onto the travel team of the elite skaters. She also has bright red hair at the moment. Well, faded red. She has had kids at her school come up to her and say, "Hey, are you the chicken AA?" And she says, "Yes." And they've gone to meetings with her. Talk about unique, but not terminal. That's in my genes. My mother lives downstairs from us. The beginning of COVID, we moved her in. And it's like Miracle-Gro on my defects. But the equal opposite is also true. I get to live a life of amends today. I get to make reparations and follow those IKEA instructions when my self tries to protect itself. When my ego edges God out, I don't need to hit my knees in desperation to find the gift of desperation. I can look for Waldo. Instead of pricking my finger on a thorn and pushing the blood out before I show it to you guys so you'll put a Band-Aid on it, I can look for the rose. Instead of pushing the clouds away by any means possible, I can step back, shift my weight, and let God do the work of showing silver linings, because there's no such thing so far, and I dare you to investigate it for yourself and help me prove this wrong. There's no such thing as a cloud without one. And my mind is baffling, powerful, and cunning. And it's told me all kinds of scary things. I can use my disease against itself with God's help. I can come up with fantastical stories in the opposite direction. As long as I don't let hope be a slippery slope to expectations, because that lands me in resentment every time. So in my life, I've had an evolution of prayer. The first prayer I ever prayed was right before my mom was hospitalized the first time. I was in third or fourth grade, and this old woman, I call Lou Bell because I don't remember her name, and my spirit sponsor's name is Lou Bell, and I grew up listening to tapes of this woman, Mary Pearl Thompson, in North Little Rock, Arkansas, who was sponsored by Lou Bell. And every night, I would listen to these tapes of her voice teaching me things. So this woman who came to my house, I scared off her partner who came with her, but she would come almost every single weekend, and when my mom was passed out, I would sit outside and talk to her to have something to do. And once she said, "McCall, have you ever prayed?" I was 7 years old. And if profanity offends you, plug your ears. I looked at this woman and I said, "Does fuck you count?" And today I think Waldo looked back at me and said, "Honey, at least you're talking to him." And so that's what I prayed for a lot of my life, until it evolved to thank you through gritted teeth. And then it evolved again to surprise me. And every morning when I would get up and do my two-way prayer, that's what I'd say: "Waldo, surprise me. I'm putting my hands in the air. You're taking the wheel in the whole damn car because you're my chauffeur, buddy." I RSVP yes to whatever you're inviting me to today, whether it's a funeral or a bar mitzvah or a wedding or a convention. I RSVP yes. And today, I pray wahoo, because as an adult child, black and white tends to be the colors I color the world with. And wahoo stands for we always have other options. And when I think of two things, it goes black and white, it's a seesaw, and I'm the fulcrum. I'm the higher power that has to keep it balanced. If I add a third, I can center instead of balance. And once you're in a center, it doesn't take much shifting to get back to it. You don't have to run around the other side and push and pull, and I can center. So if it's me and my daughter and we're having strife, wahoo, we always have other options. I add a third. I invite Waldo in. And somehow, some mystical, magical math divides my problems in half and multiplies the joys. And so far, it's consistent and constant when I offer my will. So today, if I want to throw my hands up in the air and give up, I throw my hands in the air and remember, it's a roller coaster ride. This isn't a daring feat of life and death. There's nothing to worry about if your fountain pen explodes on your hand right before you get up to talk to people for an hour on a podium for the first time since COVID started, and you're nervous. You're not getting fired. Just say yes. And let Waldo make a message out of my mess. And so far, Waldo's batting 100%. I'm so grateful for Waldo holding one hand and every single one of you holding my other, because I am finding balance. And I choose to be in the center of this stream, white water or calm. I cannot change the wind, but I can adjust my sails. So thank you guys for teaching me how to.